welcome to class today. Does anybody have any questions, comments, concerns, requests, or other things to make of me? Yes. So the question is, when in the homework, when a bird trounces another bird, the loser should go to the top of the screen, and I think your question is, does it matter if the other bird moves too? We don't specify one way or another what happens to the other bird. I would not put the other bird directly below the loser bird, otherwise the game will quickly escalate. Yes?
Can you explain the null pointer exception?
Can I explain null pointer exception? Sure. I'll do that in just a moment. Are there other questions? I'll need a little bit of background to do that. So are there other questions, other things that we can handle quickly before I go into null pointer exception? Yes?
If we submit the homework, should it give us feedback?
Like, if you submit the homework, does it give you feedback? No. If you play the game and it works, hooray, you won. That should be your feedback. No, there will be no feedback for this homework until it is graded by TAs. Or myself, if you're unlucky. Other questions before we go to null pointers? All right. So how do I... let's do this. All right, so how do we talk about null pointer exceptions? When we see code like x dot... I'll just make up something like this. X dot next int, okay? In my code somewhere. There's a lot of different things happening with this tiny little piece of code. Okay? Let's see if we can list them in order. The first step, we look inside the x variable. Okay? To see what value is in that variable. Two, that variable should have a pointer to something, otherwise we can't use dot on it. So it should be the address of some object somewhere. So we follow the address arrow. This is what the dot does. Okay? If the pointer is null, if there is no way to follow it, it points nowhere, then at this point we might get a null pointer exception. Meaning, I tried to look up what was at that address, and the address was null. I couldn't look it up. Other things would happen thereafter. But, does anybody want to talk more about this null pointer exception? This concept in this little example. Okay, in your code, null pointer exception happens because something on the left side of a period was null. And when an exception appears, it should tell you what line of code that happened. So you look at that line of code and you find something to the left side of a period that is null. One of the most common causes of this is to forget to make a constructor. Let's see how that looks. Let's make a class that will represent... what should we represent? Let's represent warthogs. Okay, so I'm going to make a warthog class, except it's going to want me to put it in a folder somewhere. Okay, so I'll make a warthog class, and let's say that every warthog has, how about a string name? All warthogs are named, okay? And then I make some, actually we'll leave main here for a moment. I'll make some method, how about public string getName. GetName length, how about that? It'll tell me how long the name is and I'll return this.name.length. Okay? And then down here in my code, I make myself a warthog named W equals a new warthog. Okay? And then I try to print out W's get name length. Okay? This code, that should be an int. Thanks. This code will have a null pointer exception. If it will decide to actually run. Okay? This code will have a null pointer exception, and when I look at the null pointer exception, I will see it tells me where it happens. It happened first on line 6, okay? And what is null on line 6? Well, this is never null. It is not possible to get Java to make this null, okay? So that leaves the other thing that's in front of a period, which is this.name. And this.name is null because I didn't ever make it anything else. When I construct a new object or create a new array, zero, false, or null get put in all of its spots. So if I don't explicitly set this.name to be something other than null, then it is null for each new warthog I make. Okay? So one of the most common cases of getting a null pointer exception is that you forgot to initialize some things in your constructor. The solution to that is to add a constructor. And make sure that my warthog constructor initializes this.name to be name. Okay? And now, when I call this method and I make my warthog named Sally, now I don't get a null pointer exception because I have initialized that value to point to something, and because it points to something, I'm able to use the dot to go see what it's pointing to. Would anybody like me to speak any more about null pointer exceptions or this example? Okay. Are there any other questions, things I can clarify before we move on, talk a little bit more about searching and sorting? All right. So, last class we talked about different ways of searching. We talked about linear search, we talked about BOGO search, we talked about binary search. I ripped telephone books in half. Fun was had by all. Okay. And we had code. This is leftover code we had from last time. We've got two different searching methods here. We've got the BOGO search and the linear search. One of them is commented out. And we're going to sort of pick up from here. So before we pick up from here, take a moment, turn to whoever you're sitting next to, and come up with some question about some portion of the code, either the not common part or the common part. Is there something I can clarify about this? So turn to whoever you're sitting next to, come up with a question. If it makes complete sense, then you can come up with a question about something else, but still come up with a question. Take a moment. Okay. Does anybody want to volunteer their question as being a cool question? Anyone? Have a good question? Yes? Sorry?
What is being true?
What does while true mean? Okay? Other questions? Sorry? How do you get false? I'm not exactly sure what you mean, but we'll look at that too, maybe. How do you get false? Yes?
Don't you need a return statement outside of the...
You need a return outside the if or outside the while?
Outside the if statement.
Outside the if, okay? Anything else we can clarify about this code? Okay. What does while true mean? All right, let's think about what while loops mean. While loops will repeat whatever is in the curly braces as long as whatever is in the parentheses are true. How long will true be true? Forever. So while true means repeat forever. Okay? So I just wrote what is called an infinite loop. It will loop forever. And then we might say, why would I want to do this? So I'm assuming how do you get false means how do I get false into the parentheses? And you don't. It says true. True will always be true. There actually are programming languages, Fortran notably among them, where you can change the truth value of true and change true to be false. But this is not one of those languages. We don't have to worry about that. Okay? So true is true. It's true. We keep looping forever. So does this method ever stop running? Yes, it does, right here. Return stops the whole method. It doesn't matter if we're in a loop or not. It just stops the method. So if we get to that line, the method will stop. Okay? So this method will repeat over and over and over and over again until we hit that line. If we never hit that line, it will repeat forever. Once we do hit that line, the whole method will end, including the loop inside of it. Okay? Then the other question is, don't I need to return outside the if? No. So Java requires a return at the end of the method. You have to return something before the method ends. The only way to end a while true loop is by breaking or returning. Since I can never actually get past the loop, I don't need to return down here. Okay? Because code down here is unreachable. Okay? Any code I were to put here on line 20 would never be run and would actually cause Java to complain because it knows we can never get to that line of code. Okay? The other question is, do I logically need one? And what are we trying to do here? We're doing a random index. We're seeing if that random index is what we were looking for, and if it was, we're returning it. If it wasn't the right thing, the idea of a BOGO search, right, is we're picking a place at random over and over again until we find the right place. So if we don't find the right one, we just want to keep going. So we do not want to return if the first random thing we find is wrong. We just want to try again. Okay? So putting a return outside of there would give me the wrong answer. Because the right thing to do if the random place I'm looking is wrong is to look at another random place. I don't know if that clarified things or not. Anybody have further questions they would like to ask about this method? All right, let's point out one other thing that's just worth noting. This method is random and stupid. Don't do it. Okay? There is almost never a reason to write anything like onto a BOGO sort. BOGO search, it just doesn't make sense. Okay? So this method here is worse in every way than the method I had commented out. Okay, so let me put back the method I had commented out, and we'll rename one of them here in a moment. Okay? So we'll call this BOGO search. And this is linear search. Okay? Linear search is just better than BOGO search. It always works. It tells me the correct answer if the number isn't in the list as well as if it is. It is easier to read. It runs faster. It is just, in every respect, better than the BOGO search. Okay, so the purpose of BOGO search is just to sort of explain how that could happen. But linear search is the one we want. All right. So, we talked last time about a few other things. We talked about binary search. We'll get to that in a moment. We also talked about the idea that we can use searching to sort a list. Okay? So, let's actually go back and see how we described that. Here we are. Let me copy this over. All right. So, we said that it is possible to sort a list using the selection sort. Okay? Okay, and the idea of a selection sort is this. We find the smallest thing in the list. I'll change this to the unsorted part of the list. Okay? And we do that using a linear search. Then we put it in the front of... at the end of the sorted part of the list. Okay? And we repeat. This is the idea of a selection sort. We look for the smallest thing in the unsorted part of the list by using linear search or something similar to linear search. We move that to the end of the sorted part of the list and then repeat. Okay? So initially, the first time we go through this, all of it will be unsorted and none of it will be sorted. And then sort of every time through, we'll put one more thing into the sorted part in the front instead of the unsorted part in the back. Okay? So let's see what this would look like. If I were to have a list, okay, like unto this. The idea of the selection sort is I will look through my list for the smallest value, which in this case happens to be 1. Okay? So I'll put a little marker here. Let's do this. Okay? So I have a little marker. Everything in front of the marker is sorted. Everything after the marker is not. Nothing is sorted initially. I find the smallest value. The smallest value is a 1. I will put the 1 in the front of the list and then say now the first element in the list is sorted. I will then look through the unsorted part of the list again. I will notice, 4 is the smallest element in the unsorted part of the list. Okay? So I will just move that 4 up to the beginning of the list, the end of the sorted part. And then I will look through it again for the next smallest value. Okay? And I'll find that there's an 8 there. And I'll put that up front. And I will just repeat that over and over again, putting one new thing at a time. Each time I find that new thing to put in that spot by using something similar to a linear search, looking for the smallest value in the unsorted part of the list. Anybody confused about the concept behind selection sort, how it should work? All right. Putting things in a particular spot into a list is slightly tricky, okay, because there was already something there. So usually what we actually do when we do selection sort, these first two steps look the same, but what we usually actually do is instead of moving something and sliding everything else down, we swap what's in two different places. Okay? So we're going to take, actually it's going to look the same for the first 3 of these steps. Okay? Let's consider this next case though where we're moving the 8. Okay? I want to move the 8 to be the third thing in the list. So the idea is I'm going to swap what the 8 and the third thing in the list. Okay, so I'm going to just swap which one's which. And then I'm going to change what I'm considering to be sorted. The nice thing about the swapping is I just have to look at 2 spots in the list. The place I want it to go, the other place. Pull the values out, swap where they are. The rest of the list stays the same. And my life is easier that way than it would be if I were to try to move it down the list, right? So I'm just going to swap what is where by removing a value from one spot and toggling their position. Okay? So usually when we do selection sort, we're doing it based on this sort of swap behavior in order to avoid moving more elements of the list than I have to. Questions about what I mean by swapping in this case? All right, then here's what I'd like you to do. Write selection sort. I would encourage you to work with whoever's sitting next to you. If you feel really brave, I would encourage you to write it like by hand instead of in code. This will be good practice for writing things on a test, right? So we know what linear selection sort's supposed to do. Search through, find the smallest thing, swap it with whoever's in front, move your way down. See if you could create code that does that. So take a few minutes. I and the TAs will wander around trying to answer questions. Before I do that, so now that you know you actually have to do this, I may want me to clarify what should happen. Okay. Take a few minutes and try to write this code. We'll take it from there afterwards. Start with a little piece of how I would do this, okay? So the basic process is I'm going to find a small thing and swap it with some other position. Okay, so I'm just going to do a little piece in the middle here. I'm going to do index of small thing. And I'm just going to arbitrarily say it's 5. This is not, fix me, not 5 in general. Okay, let's suppose I have an index of a small thing. What do I do with that index of a small thing? I also need to know where to swap it with. So index of first unsorted thing. And I will say that's 3. We should fix me this as well. Okay. We can figure out how to make these values. So you want to know what those 2 numbers are. Okay. And then the next step is just swap those 2 values. So I'm going to get small thing, which is going to be my list.get the index of small thing. Okay? And I'm going to have other thing, which is going to be based off of the index of the first unsorted thing. Okay? So I'll grab those two elements out of my list, and then I'll just put them back in. So remember, set does that, so I'm going to use the index of the first unsorted thing is going to get the small thing. Okay? So I'm going to, and then I'm going to, the index of the small thing is going to get the other thing. And then, now one more thing is sorted. Okay? So this logic has to happen. What's this logic say? Once I know what the small thing is, right? So in this example, the small thing was 32. And once I know where the first unsorted thing is, which was 321, then I'm going to swap which one is which. So I'm going to put the 321 where the 32 was, and the 32 where the 321 was. And I do that by grabbing them out, putting them back in, and then I'm going to move my index, which I represent here as boxes. I'm going to move my index one forward. So this is sort of the core activity that needs to happen. Questions about that core activity? All right. Take a few more minutes and see if you could turn this into something I should comment, because you'll need to know this in a moment. If you go to the course website if you go to Colab under assignments, you will see there's a place, I want you to show me what you have. Okay? So you're welcome to just type it in sort of humanish thing into the text box. You're welcome to submit some code. Okay? So take a few minutes and try to finish this out. Okay? And then we'll come back and talk some more about how it works and why. What do I set as the index of the small thing? Right? Is that what you're asking? Okay, good question. So, how do I find the index of the smallest thing in a list? Well, I just look at everything in the list. Okay? So let me move things around a little bit. In general, the smallest index I could possibly have for the smallest thing in the unsorted part of the list would be the index of the first unsorted thing in the list. Right? It can't be any earlier than that. Because before that, it's not the unsorted part of the list. I'm looking for the index of the smallest thing in the unsorted part. So I'm going to start looking there. And then I'm just going to look at things that are bigger than that. Okay? So let's start there. And let's keep going up to the entire length of the list, because it may be anywhere in there. Okay? So I'm going to just loop over every possible index from there on up. I don't know in general which position has it, so I'm going to look at all of them. This is similar to the linear search, right? Looking at every element in the list. With a little exception, I start with the index of the first unsorted thing. I don't care about things before that because they're already sorted. And then what I want to do is decide, did I find something smaller than I had before? Okay? So I want to do something like, if this spot is smaller, then I want to change the index of the small thing to be I. Okay? Conceptually, if I find something that's smaller, I update where the smallest thing is, and I keep doing that for every spot, and in the end, I will know where the smallest thing was. Okay? So that just leaves, how do I tell if this spot is smaller? Well, this spot is smaller is list.getI, because that's this spot. If that is smaller than, less than, the spot I had before, which was the index of the small thing. And now I've just written in Java, this spot is smaller than the other spot. Okay? Ta-da! I now have the index of the small thing. Questions, comments, things I can clarify about that. Just out of wild curiosity, I had something like that. All right. Good. Okay. Tell tell you what, in interest of time, what I'd like you to do, go to Colab and give me whatever you have. Okay? This is not graded. If you don't have a computer with you, that's okay. I would like to see sort of how far you got along so I know how much of this I should reinforce when we come back to class again so these concepts will be understood. So if you go to Colab, if you wrote codes, submit that. If you have it in a text document, you could just copy-paste it in. You don't need to worry too much about this. This will not be graded. It's for my understanding so I can help you better teach. But I'd appreciate if you take a moment and do that right now. Okay? Meanwhile, there's very little more to do with this piece of code. I'm basically done. The only other thing to do is start off the index of the first unsorted thing initially is 0, and then while that index of the first unsorted thing is less than the list size, I repeat. And poof, the whole method is done. Okay? So I start with the whole thing unsorted, the index of the first unsorted thing is 0. I find the smallest thing, I swap where they are, I move forward. I find the smallest thing, I swap where they are, I move forward until I've looked at the whole list. And this should sort my list. Anything anybody like me to clarify about this method? Okay, let's see if it works. Okay. I will post this on the course website after my 3 o'clock lecture, so sometime this afternoon, 4 or 5, somewhere around there, this will become available. You're certainly welcome to copy it down in between if you want. But I had, all right, let's make ourselves a list of integers instead of a list of strings, because that's how I wrote my method, to work on a list of integers. And then let's add some integers to this list. Okay. And then I will do searching methods dot. Oh, what did I call this class? Oh, I didn't make it static. There we are. Public static void selection sort. So I go to selection sort, my list. And then I'll print out my list. Okay. And it doesn't like something that I forgot a semicolon. All right. So this method did correctly sort my list, okay, by grabbing one element at a time and moving it into place. And if I wanted to see more explicitly what it was doing, I could print out the list over and over again. Okay. So I could just do a system.println up here to see what's happening at every step along the way and print out my list as I go. And then I would see that it moves sort of one thing into position at a time. So the -5 goes there, the 1 was already there, the 4 goes, negative 1, then the 3, then the 4. And we end up with a sorted list. Okay. Yes? Can I scroll up? I can. Any part of this method anybody would like me to clarify or talk about? So we said last time that this method is going to require about quadratic time, square of the length of the list. Right? If we have a list of n elements, how many times is this going to run? Well, the while loop will run about n times. As we have it written, it'll run exactly n times. Okay? And then the for loop will run a little less than n, but in the around n. And so we'll end up with having something around n squared total passes through this system. Okay? So this if statement right here, these get commands will happen n squared-ish times for a list of size n. Okay? Which means as it gets bigger, I expect it to slow down rather quickly. If I were to make lists of 1,000 things, I expect it to slow down. Now, it turns out you have to get quite big before you can make Java slow enough to notice. There are more efficient ways of sorting. But I think this nicely illustrates this idea that I could sort of use this search, a slightly modified version of the search, inside another process to solve a problem. All right. Any other things people would like me to say about this? Okay. Then let's talk a bit about binary search. Binary search was fun. So, binary search is a lot messier, okay? Because binary search needs to keep track of more things, okay? Not binary search, but yeah, binary search, okay? It's messier than linear search. It's not as messy as sort, probably. Maybe about as messy as sort. So remember, how does binary search work? We look in the middle. We decide if we're below or above that. And depending on which side of that we're on, we look at a smaller and smaller range. We keep chopping the range of where we could possibly be into a smaller chunk. I did this by throwing away portions of the list. Throwing things away in Java is surprisingly difficult. So we're instead going to keep track of sort of the two fingers in the book approach, right? We're going to keep track of the beginning and the end of the place where we think the number could be. So, how do we do that? We're going to have a beginning, which will start off at 0, and an end, which will start off at list.size. Okay? And the idea is, the thing we're looking for is somewhere in the middle. Where? We don't know yet. But it's going to be somewhere between these two things. And the basic process of binary search, we're going to repeat something, because it's a search. So what are we going to repeat? We're going to look at the midpoint of beginning and end. I guess I should be grammatically consistent. We'll call this begin and end instead of beginning and end. Okay? So we're going to look halfway in between them. If less than... So if the thing I'm looking at is less than what I'm looking for, I know I don't have to look earlier, right? Alphabetical order, we can just look farther down in the list. So that means my new beginning can equal the midpoint. It's the earliest I will ever have to look. It could actually be the midpoint plus one. Okay? So I've checked the midpoint, it wasn't it. I can look past that. Right? If greater than, then the ending can equal the midpoint. I don't have to look there or past it. Again, I'm using the Java standard. I'm including the left and excluding the right, right? So I'm starting at 0 and ending at the size, even though the largest index is size minus 1. There's other ways to do this, okay? Let's do it the other way. Let's make these both valid indices, okay? It may be slightly clearer. So if I find an element, and of course if I find it, I'm done. Okay? So if equals, done. So I'm going to check some element. I'm either big or small or the same as it. If I'm the same, I'm done. I found it. If I'm smaller, I'm just going to reduce the range I'm looking at. If I'm bigger, I'm going to reduce it in the other direction. This is the basic idea of how binary search works. Got the two fingers in the book. We're moving them closer together as we open the pages at random. Questions about that concept? So let's see what this looks like. Okay? So let's actually ask ourselves, how do we know if we're done? How do we know if we did not find the element? Yeah?
You're at the point where there's only one element left.
Okay, we could say I haven't found it if there's only one thing left. What if that one thing is the element?
If there's
only one left and it doesn't equal, I can do that. But I could also say, what if I have the beginning is bigger than the end? Okay? So what will happen if there's only one thing left? I'll either be less than it, in which case I'll move one thing too far early, or after it, in which case I'll move the other thing too far. But I'll end up with an empty range. Okay? This may not be immediately clear, but the idea is... if I continue as long as I have something to look at, then eventually I'll have nothing to look at because I'll have looked at everything. This means I have something to look at. Somewhere between beginning and end, there's some value I have not seen. Okay? My midpoint is going to equal halfway between the beginning and the end. Okay? So I find the middle index. I'm going to need to actually get the middle value as well. So I'll get that with a get command. Okay, so turn that index into a value. And then I want to compare that value to the value that I'm looking for. So remember, this is a search. I should have had a value here as well. Right, something I'm looking for. because the purpose of search is to find if something's there. So I should not call this both value. Let's call this a goal. Okay. So if the value is the same as the goal, if I found what I'm looking for, then I can just return the midpoint. Okay. I found it. Yikes. Okay. This should be an int method. But if I didn't find it, and I found something that was too small, that means the beginning half of my list is not holding it, so I'm going to move the beginning of my endpoint up. Okay? Missing an if here, right? So if I'm too small, I'm going to move my beginning endpoint up to the middle plus one. I've checked the middle already. I can start looking past it now. Next pass through, I move past it. Okay? The only other case is if the value was greater than the goal, so there the ending point is going to be the middle point plus what? Minus one. Okay? So I repeatedly look in the middle, check it against what I've got. I'm either equal, less than, or greater than. Equal, I return it. Less than or greater than, I adjust my boundaries that I'm looking at accordingly. And if I don't find it, then it wasn't in the list. And in traditional index of fashion, we're going to return negative one in that case. Okay. Binary search. Questions? Yes?
Aren't you always going to get, if you have one to
mind? Okay, I won't ever mind. Okay, let's try to see what this does. Okay, so I'm actually going to print out a lot of junk. So every step through here, I'm going to print out. Let's print out the whole list and the beginning and the ending and the middle point. Okay, we'll just print out those indices. And then let's use it. So then I'm going to do searching methods dot binary search with the list, and oh, let's look for two. Okay. And I need a semicolon. And I'll run this and I see it only checks a couple things. The first time through, I start off the beginning and end at zero and list minus size. Zero, list minus size. Okay, so I have my zero and my four, because there are five things in this list, so the biggest index is four. I look at the thing at index two, which is a one. I am bigger than the thing at index two, so I'm going to move up my bottom boundary to start at the three. Now I'm looking just between three and four. I check index three. It's smaller than index 3, so it's going to move the ending midpoint down. Let's actually print that out as well. Okay. Okay, so I'm bigger, smaller than the 3, so I'm going to move the ending endpoint down to before 3. Now I'm looking starting at 3 and ending at 2. There's nothing there. I've looked at the whole list. And I'm done. I'm going to return a negative one. Okay? So this method very rapidly chops the list in half a few times, even for very large lists it would do that, and returns me where the index is. When we come back on Wednesday, we'll talk about how to describe this recursively, maybe a more natural way to do that, and we'll talk some more about recursion in general. I'll post this code later this afternoon.